This is the Upreneur FM podcast. We bring you the strategies and resources you need to build, market, and monetize a profitable, future-proof business around your knowledge and expertise. And now, here's your host, international business mentor and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
Yes, hello and welcome to the show. Before we get started, if you're serious about making the next 90 days truly count in the growth of your business, I'd like to invite you to our next quarterly deep dive planning session, which is coming up very soon. It's your chance to work on your business uninterrupted for a few hours alongside myself, some special guests, and your fellow entrepreneurs. So for more info and to grab one of the limited spots that we've got available, visit upreneur.com/deep dive. Right, let's get into the show. So welcome back to the podcast. Hope you're doing very well. Appreciate you tuning in. In this episode, I sit down with Ash Borland from ashborland.com. He's a mortgage marketing coach and he helps mortgage advisors ultimately unlock the secrets to becoming an unforgettable mortgage broker. He's been doing this for a good few years after hitting a little bit of a wall and then coming to one of our events and figuring out exactly what he needed to do to pivot and unlock everything that he was doing from a growth standpoint. He podcasts, he does tons of video, does tons of social. He actually creates an hour's worth of content every single day of the month, and he's actually pretty good at it as well. So if you want to find out a little bit more about Ash's journey, what he's all about, how he's built this business, and how he's now six figures plus, 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 just keep listening. Here we go.
Upreneur FM, your number one personal brand business podcast.
So Ash, welcome to the show.
Hello, Chris. Thank you very much for having me on.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, man. Well, look, I've known you for a good few years now. You've been doing some good stuff in the mortgage game. Let's sort of like, for those who have not discovered you, and this is such a crap question to kind of kick off a conversation with for a podcast, but for those of you who've never heard of Ash before, Ash, tell us a little bit about what you do and how you do it. But yes, please go ahead. Give us the elevator pitch, what you're all
awesome.
About.
No worries. Very simple. I am a summer marketing and business coach for mortgage brokers, pretty much. Help mortgage brokers build personal brands, very similar to what you do, but on a smaller scale in a tight niche in a regulated environment. And been doing it now for, been making content for 7 years. I was one of the first people in the mortgage industry to make video content back in the day. Thought I was a mortgage broker, thought that was going to be my career. Turned out that there was more and more people who wanted to learn how to do what I did as opposed to actually want to buy from me. Yeah. So I pivoted about 5 years ago, and ever since then, it's been kind of on the slow up until obviously me and you mentioned we met about a couple of years ago, and it's been on a rocket up over the last 2 years. But yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell, really.
Yeah. So what you're trying to say is meeting me changed everything.
In a weird way. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I was just merely joking. Okay. So you say you kind of like pivoted five years or so ago. How did you like initially start that pivot? How did you start kind of like turn around and say to yourself, right, I'm going to go from doing this to actually teaching people how to do this part of this? What did that initially look like in terms of marketing your expertise, and even maybe kind of like tell us a little bit about how you got your first client or two as well?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, well, the way I describe it is I started off making videos, trying to generate clients. And it's a little bit like guys go to the gym, try and get big and buff to try and attract girls, only then to find out that more and more guys message them asking how they look so great. So it was kind of a similar thing where more mortgage brokers were asking me how I was doing what I was doing as opposed to clients. So for every one client that reached out, I probably get two brokers saying, how did you do that video? How did you market yourself? It only really came, it was by accident, was I remember I still was not really wanting to do it, but I remember a guy reaching out to me and he was like, you know, can you come and teach me how to do this? And I was like, no, I don't do that. And he said, please, I'll pay you for the day. And at the time I was like, okay, my mortgage fee is £500 plus, obviously. I was at the time, I'm thinking, no one's going to pay me 500 quid to go there for the day, which is ridiculous now. But at the time, and then I remember, and it was a new market, funnily enough. And he was like, yeah, I'll pay £500. So I went down there that day to set up his cameras, set up his lighting, did all that type of stuff. And got paid £500. And it was one of those things where I remember getting in the car and driving back and calling my wife and going, I've just been paid 500 quid for no regulation. Like, you know, because with mortgages and financial services, you're very regulated, very compliant. I was like, I've just been paid 500 quid to do something I would have done for free. I was like, I think there's something here. And that night I went home and I just put a post up on Facebook and was like, does anyone else want help? And it didn't take off, so to speak. Like, but it was quite that I just started pivoting my marketing.
The validation was there ultimately.
Yes. Yeah. Because I was the first in the industry. And I remember that was the thing that was really important to me, was I remember meeting a guy who was first in 3G. So in the 3G in car phone like warehouse, he was making seven figures when I met him, did his mortgage. And he was saying that I said to him, how did you do it? He didn't have a university degree, didn't have anything. And he said, I just got obsessed with something when it started. And then I just dived in and got really deep into it right at the beginning when it was emerging in the industry. He said, and I became the expert in it. And so from that moment, I was just looking for what I call my 3G moment. And I felt like at that point it was my that was my 3G moment. And when a mortgage came up for renewal, I just went, me and my wife just remortgaged the house and we just shut the mortgage business down and went all in on this. And if I'm going to, and then at that point, we also found out we were pregnant with our first child, which was the worst thing at the time, but that was.
Yeah. Oh, let's go all in. Right?
It was all in. It was burn the boats kind of. So my marketing had, without unbetold to me and unbeknownst to me, sorry, I didn't realize I'd been really marketing, thinking I'm marketing to mortgage brokers, to clients. Sorry, I was actually marketing to them the whole time.
Yeah,
so it was a bit of a kind of looking back.
This is not the first time that I've spoken to somebody who has a strong personal brand that realizes when they look back at things, you know, like retrospectively, that actually they've been doing this much longer than they thought they had already. Whether it be building a personal brand specifically or serving one type of clientele instead of another, right? Yeah. And I mean, I look back on things and think, well, holy moly, like I've had a personal brand 20 years. It's called my reputation. You know, like people have always signed up to do business with me rather than a company or a brand or an outcome, right? And I think that's really important for people to appreciate and take on board. So what platforms then did you kind of utilize initially, and have they changed at all in terms of like showcasing your abilities, your expertise, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, massively. So when I first started, I'm like mid 30s, so I'm of a generation where social media, we didn't grow up with it, but it came right at when I was in my like early adulthood. So it was like 18 19 20, so to me it was quite alien at the time. Instagram was the one I started on purely because I'd followed a lot of, we'd say like Gary Vee, we'd followed a lot of these kind of people who were on Instagram, but I also was a big component of like repurposing. And so I would take Instagram content, it would kind of fail, but I'd repurpose it everywhere else, and it repurposed onto LinkedIn and it took off on LinkedIn. Like really, really, it's not so much now, but at the time, about 5 6 years ago, it just all of a sudden took off. I didn't realize, I was just throwing it up there, thinking nothing of it. And then when I looked back at it, that was really where it started. That was the first platform where I actually had traction. And then from there, it moved into podcasting. Podcasting did very well. I've been charted in different things, but again, that was a whole different journey. Mm-hmm. And then now it's pretty much all platforms now. I've been doing it long enough in a very, very micro, like nano niche, in which I'm the only guy that really does what I do. So all platforms work, but they don't work if you would look at them. So funnily enough, the thing I had to learn was if you look at them, they're not mega numbers. They're very small views. You know, my ideal client is only 15,000 in the UK. So if I'm getting a video that's over 15,000, it's hitting the wrong people anyway. So I'm on everywhere now, but originally it was Instagram. It was Instagram hoping it would work, and LinkedIn where it did, then right. Podcasting.
So do you feel like, I mean, you mentioned like a whole different, I mean, yeah, you're everywhere. Like, do you feel like there's one particular kind of moment, or not strategy per se, but was there one particular thing that helped? I mean, you know, did you experience a little bit of a hockey stick moment at all in terms of elevating that visibility?
But so visibility, so there's two different ones, is visibility and income. With the first one, visibility, was when I very first started, I took on a client and I just threw everything into this client. And I remember that was when it really took off, was I had two clients and I just spent hours with this guy crafting this really good video, behavioral psychology into the text, everything we could. We launched the video and he launched it into a Facebook group. And that was when the business became a business, because that night, it was a Thursday night, and I remember sitting there and everybody, all of a sudden people were reaching out to me. And by the end of the Friday, I'd signed up 20 clients. And it was just kind of like, oh my gosh, this is real. Because up until that point, it wasn't real. So that was the first hockey stick moment in regards to clients, and this is a business and I can make a living. It then kind of dipped. And as it dipped, because I got distracted. So over the years, I always say mindset is probably where businesses go to die, because you get sucked into this like mindset of kind of like, I'm going to be a motivational mindset coach instead of a practical coach. And I ended up going down, I see your face smiling, you go down that route. And when I met you, I went to, so got one of my guys who was the first person to spot me was a guy called Alex Curtis, who was a student of yours. So you'd been on my radar from day one because of him. And when I met you, I remember your event coming up, and I remember thinking, which was the Business Breakthrough event, which I don't think you do anymore, but at the time, I think it was your first one. And I thought, you know what? I've got nothing to lose. I'm stuck at this income level. I can't do anything.
Yep.
And I was like, so I'll go to this event. And at the time, I was trying to be personal branding for everybody. I was trying to help small business owners. I was trying to do, because I hadn't really niched. And I went to your event, and it was your event. We did a hand raiser thing where you made us write.
I remember this. Yeah. I remember.
And
this
I got about 400 people.
It was ridiculous, wasn't
it?
I remember.
Crazy. Yeah. And I remember chatting to you, and I remember talking to you a little bit in the lunch break and being like, I'm a bit lost and I don't really know what to do. And you were like, well, we went through it a little bit, and you were like, well, niche, go deeper. And I left that event being like, I've messed up big time here, because my audience was brokers the whole time and I've tried my hardest to run away from them. And I kind of needed that. That moment was the big moment. That was the life-changing moment. That was. I remember coming home and changing everything. Coming home and changing absolutely everything, rebranding everything, like deleting things, getting rid of things that I was never going to do again, you know, like channels that were about personal branding, but they weren't personal brand niche specific, everything. And that changed us from, you can pay the bills, but my wife's going to go back off, we'll have to come back off maternity leave to be honest, to financial freedom. It was that. And it happened within weeks. It really
because
was.
I remember you came back to the event at a future date, and you had kind of updated me in terms of how much things had changed and, you know, the things that you were doing now to kind of monetize. And we'll go into that in a minute. But kind of like, what does the day to day look like now then for you, before we get into the offers
so,
and money and all
and
that
I'm
stuff?
Very open about anything. Like, I'm open book, I'm very open about all that stuff. So my day to day, I realized, which was counter to what many people do, in my niche, there were lots of people who were doing courses, group coaching, which again, I really liked, but everyone wanted one-to-one. So there was massive high ticket one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being like the low ticket one-to-one, there was everyone was trying to go down the groups, like what you do, which is the right way to scale, but in a very micro niche. It's really tough. And there was all these groups who were just hemorrhaging clients, because they weren't getting the results they wanted, because there wasn't that extra level of things. So I just hiked my prices up and went into a very niche one-to-one. I do coaching and one-to-one coaching, and also all my courses are free to undercut. It's like a weird kind of business model, but the one-to-ones are very expensive. And my day-to-day is very simple. I wake up in the morning, I go to do everything else, family, all that stuff before I come to work. And when I get to work, I spend an hour making content every day, and then I see four clients a day, and I call it my odds and evens, which is when I see clients on odd numbers of the day and have admin work or kind of buffer time on evens. So 11, 1, 3, 5.
I like that. That's a cool idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all client facing. And then, you know, 12, 2, 4, they are not. And I never then feel fully worked. And I do that 5 days a week. I can do it anywhere remotely. It doesn't matter. I'm now, you know, that's what my diary is, Monday to Friday. And I've got a young family. So very much important to me to be with my kids playing on the Switch in the evening and, you know, spending breakfast with them in the morning and lunches and stuff in the day. So I try not to work too hard, but whenever there's whenever I reach a limit, I just up the prices and they just keep going up and up and up. And that's kind of the kind of business strategy for me. It's very straightforward. It is just one-to-one. As time goes on, there will be group coaching and things like that. However, that is, it's more that people are coming to want to partner with me now, as opposed to, so I can let them do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And I mean, you know, you've got a lot of different opportunities that come out of these very close one-on-one relationships. I mean, obviously, yes, it's not truly scalable, but you can make more money as simply just as either A, jacking those prices up, like you say, or B, taking on board some sort of an equity holding on people's businesses when you work with them and that kind of stuff. So
the issue I have with my industry, and I realized this actually after our second, after I joined the incubator and then obviously the second business breakthrough event, was the issue I had is it's an emerging market. My niche is very small and I was the first in the industry to do it. So I realized that I needed to bring in more people into the industry because I needed more competitors, as silly as that sounded. I was like, I need more competitors. I need more validation of what I do. And so it's that kind of all ships rise in high tide. So my focus has been on trying to bring more people who are like me in. And I got this from after your event, I listened to a book and it was just talking about Louis Vuitton saying that they would create a lot of the, not the knockoff, but the ones that look like it, because they kind of cannibalize themselves, because that way they're able to constantly make themselves look more valuable. And so that was my market. That was my shift, was trying to make, we need more people in, because the more that did it, the more the networks within the mortgage space started going, yeah, but he's the number one guy.
Right, so I'm with you.
This is validating it.
Is that where the idea of, you know, courses and content and things like that, is that where the idea came to give that stuff away for free? Or like, is there another ulterior motive to that?
So that one was actually, yeah, it was that. So it was very much like, I can't help. And with my clients, I can only work with a certain number of clients. And I hit a waiting list. And my waiting list now is you know, like it's about 210 people on the waiting list for one-to-one coaching. And I only work with 20 people. So it's really, it hit this point where I was like, I don't know what to do. So what I did was create this free course. And it's just one course, but it's a very comprehensive course. And that course was released. It's as good, if not better, than my competitors who charge $2,500-$3,000 for it. So I was like, I wanted to do that. And that course gets updated every year with all the latest findings we found over the previous year with clients who've paid me. So the clients who've paid me, what's worked, the course is backed by data. We see what has worked. And when we add it to it, we remove the old stuff. And so it becomes this kind of working document. It will inevitably become a book eventually. So I'm trying to think of like how that will go. And the mindset around that was, I need saturation. I need market saturation. And I'm looking at this from a long play of, I want to be able to coach these organizations, these financial institutions. And I can do that in two ways. I can do that in going up to them, pitching them and help making them, telling them all the things I can do for them. Or I can educate them from the ground up. And as those people listen to my podcasts every day, they listen to the courses every year, those people who run those companies will have grown up with me being the guy that's taught them.
Yeah.
And that has happened in the last 2 years. There are people who are in high, you know, positions who are already messaging me going, we play your course for the 300 advisors we have in our firm. And I'm like,
right,
great. Because that's what I want, because I'm trying to build goodwill, because when that course does come out that I do want to bring people in, I don't want 200 people on a waiting list go for a course. I want, 4,000. I want a big number that I can go push them through.
It sounds to me like, I mean, you're on very much, at least at the moment anyway, a somewhat of a lonely journey to a certain degree, right? Which is fine if you're happy with that. I mean, have you teamed up? Have you done, any kind of collaboration with other people in the industry, or maybe not in the industry? Like, what have you done to kind of like enhance that impact and that personal brand and expand that reach a little bit?
So I originally partnered with somebody a few years ago, did all right with it, but my brand ended up being bigger than his, and it ended up that he was trading on my brand more than anything else, which was a bit annoying. But actually, coming as
you dumped him when you realized
That was after your course. It was after your thing.
Is what you're trying to say.
One of the things that you said on your you said, don't be afraid to ghost people if they're not valuable, which is very true.
Dude, what you see is what you get with me, man. I don't sugarcoat anything at this point in my life. I just tell you how it is, you know.
I like that, and that helped me. And I was like, this guy's a waste of time. I'm not making it. So I got rid of it. But yes, there is one of the things I've been working on at the moment is I'm in marketing. And one of my clients is in protection insurance sales. He's a sales coach and I'm a marketing coach and we built his business. And the collaboration is that's happening right now. So like there's a collaboration of there is a mastermind in the works between me and this guy called Matt, which which will be very, very, very big when it's come. It's already being picked up by all of the magazines and things like that. So, and that will be a course and a mastermind. So yes, there is, but the hard bit I found was, and it was lonely, but it was finding who do I want to pair with, who I truly believe would represent my brand in the way I want it to be represented. Because like you said before about reputation, it's so important. And in a small world, and especially in financial services, what I do is not what people want. It is what's necessary because it's coming, digital marketing, social media. But it's a very older industry, which is very stuck in its ways. So any way to discredit what we do is a big thing. So I have to be very careful on who I choose because there are a lot of cowboys out there who don't understand financial services, haven't been in the environment before, think they can just do a normal marketing campaign and get away with it. And then, so it's been a tough one, but this partnership has happened for that reason. Because I can't go any further on my own. But it's going to be very slow. And so, 2024 has been about, and there's a couple of other strategic partnerships in play at the moment that we're by the end of 2024 should be.
I think in some industries, you know, partnerships A, make a lot more sense and B, allow you to ultimately scale a lot faster.
Yeah.
But there are some industries, obviously, where that just wouldn't make sense. You know, like you've got to carry on going on it alone and you scale by building a team and things like that. Have you got people that are working with you now at this stage in the game? Are you really
staff,
a true one-man band?
All on my own. Yeah, literally all on my own. Yeah, my expenses are like 10 grand a year. Like it's literally ridiculous.
Yeah.
The reason is that it's not very difficult. Systems and processes are built
it's
in
a simple
place.
Business model. It very is what simple. It is. Yeah. What are you charging now for a one-on-one client? What kind of investment do they make in you?
So it's minimum commitment when people work with me. So 18 months. And so for one call, that's about 1,800 at the moment.
Right. So, okay. So, I mean, yeah, clearly, you know, the people that are going to ultimately end up becoming clients of yours, they're not brand new in the industry. They've been for a while and they've got the money to invest and they appreciate
the
investments needed.
So they have to be turning over six figures. They have to show me their P&Ls. They have to, again, took this cut from your round table, actually, when I started seeing it was like being more strategic. So it was like, they have to be six figures. They have to show me their P&Ls. They have to be fee charging advisors because I can't help people who don't see value in themselves.
Of course.
And there's like criteria. And if they don't, then I won't take them. So yeah, as of right now, it's 1800. It will be going up to, it will go up to 2,500 as of April for any new client coming in. So that's a 1 hour call.
And is it one call per month? Is that the way it works? So basically, you're maxed at like 20 people fundamentally, right? Like if you know, and then obviously, you know, you're a dad, you've got another young one as well. So you've got two kids, you've got a wife, you've got, you know, health battles that you've struggled with, which are now you're on the other side of, but obviously the lifestyle side of things is important for you as well as obviously earning money and providing as well. Like how does that from a day-to-day living perspective, how focused is the personal? And I don't do work-life balance discussions. I don't believe that. That's a myth in my mind. But like what do you do to make sure that you're on form every day from a work perspective in terms of the personal side of things? I mean, are you still, I know you were like, you were big into your ice dips and stuff like that. Like, my gosh. You know, I recently got a text from my mate Lewis Howes, and he was like, when are you visiting, man? We got a new house. There's a spare room and there's a sauna and we've got ice dips and a basketball court and it's going to be great. And I'm like, if I come to LA, I'm not staying at your house. You lost me at ice dips. You lost me at like the ice dip thing. It's no, not going to happen. Do it.
I think you'd be great.
Oh, dear me. But I tell you what, if I were to ever do it, it would probably be with somebody like Lewis, because he's got that kind of, he's got that pull on having you do things against your will.
He goes and trains with Wim Hof and everything. So he does like
he does, yeah, stuff. Yeah.
So if you're going to do it with somebody, you want to go with somebody who actually knows.
I'll go and do it with LH. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, are you still doing that sort of stuff?
Yeah. So my life, because I've got ADHD. So my life is like built around frameworks, because otherwise it just all falls apart.
Yeah.
And so I have a thing which I call my compoundable tasks. It's a list of things I have to do. And the compoundable tasks are, there's exercise. And so like in the morning, for example, I get up, first thing I do is I'll go work out for an hour and a half before everyone's awake. I will then, I'll listen to an audiobook during that hour and a half. I'll spend an hour with my son in the morning. So all of these things, the goal for me is, and there's lots of them on, there's a long list, and they're just checklists, but the idea for me is that by the time I reach 11 o'clock every day, 7 days a week for me, I don't do weekends. Not that I don't work. I don't take that time off for the compoundables, because life doesn't stop with that. You know, you still.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So I always do that. And the goal for me is that by 11, I am completely and utterly my client's focus. There's nothing going on in my head at that point. I've answered every email, my business is pushed forward, my personal life is put forward, everything that needs to be done is done. And so then all I have to do is focus on giving the best advice to my clients. And in between those odds and evens, as I said, that's where I spend time. Like I watch YouTube videos, I make notes on things, I might study new material to try and improve what I'm doing. So it's that time is just on kind of more free, relaxed time, but it's the compoundable stuff is the stuff that, and I call it like my must do, should do, and want to do. And mm-hmm. So like, you must do those every day. I should do these certain things. And if I want to do them, I can do those extras. So I think it's, for me, I'm just a big advocate of compounding 1% every day. My life has changed because of it. And so I really make time for those things. And the ice baths are in that.
You're still doing them daily?
Yeah, daily. So I do those. So I run 5K every day, do weight training every day, do yoga half an hour every day.
Making all of us feel very insecure and extremely lazy.
I also don't
right
do
now,
anything actually. Else. But I'm an obsessive person. This is the problem. Yeah. So for me, I am an obsessive person. And once I got diagnosed with ADHD, it was like, okay, it makes sense.
So did that happen later in your life or earlier?
2 years
on?
Ago.
Two years ago. Wow. Okay. So makes what sense. Brought you to that? I guess to that moment where you're like, something's off. I need to go and figure out what this is. Like, was there a catalyst there?
So I've always never really, I've always been quite like different to everybody else. So what
already established that with the ice bath moment. We can get over that now already.
What started happening was I was like, as I was doing things, I used to find things easier than others in some ways. And then some things much harder, you know, mm-hmm. than others. And actually where it came from was I was with clients. I would like say to them, like, can you not just do this? And they would not do, they were like, no, I like that. Like, well, just wake up and go to work out for half an hour and a half. And they were like, well, I can't do that. And I was thinking, well, how can you not do that?
Right.
And it kind of just, as the more and more I worked with people who are successful, I started realizing like, I'm not, like, I don't think the way these people are thinking, which was both good and bad, a bit weird, a bit frustrating. And so I did a number of tests. One of the tests I did, I went and got professionally my IQ tested, and I went and got an ADHD like examination. It turned out that I'm very ADHD and also very, very high IQ, which was a weird combination, but it helped me understand. So that was the moment, because I couldn't understand why they couldn't get the concept and they couldn't get like the strategies we were going for. And it made me realize I'm the problem. In a weird way, like I need to, like if I've got an IQ of like 146, I can't, you know, if I can't explain that, that's not their fault. I need to make sure I bring that down to their level as opposed to my level. And
yep.
And then I realized as well with success, I was like, the things I'm good at are the things that I systemize. Because what I would make a joke about was I said this to the woman who diagnosed with ADHD. I said, if I do things in sequence, they're like dominoes. So I wake up, I do this, I do this, I do everything the same order. said, but if I don't wake up and go for the run in the morning, I won't brush my teeth. And she was like, what? And I was like, yes. I said, I'll get to the next day and be like, oh, I didn't brush my teeth. What? How did that happen? And it can be like lots of things. But what I realized was, but when I work in sequence, I become tunnel visioned and I just go through my day like a kind of like a tunnel. And that was when I realized that a few years ago. But then when she said, that's a real big sign of ADHD. So you're managing it really well. Don't take any medication because of that, because of the way I manage it. But that was, it was starting to become a problem because I was just setting on unachievable tasks for my clients. I was setting things that, you know, everybody else would think would be, I'd think was doable.
Yeah.
It wasn't. So that, and it, again, another one of those moments of like, it changed everything in the business.
You mentioned, just before we wrap up, you mentioned that you spend an hour a day doing nothing but creating content. Do you have that? I mean, I'm assuming the answer to this question is yes. So it's a lowball one for you. But like, I mean, do you have actual like flows that you follow, checklists that you follow when creating that content? Like, do you want to share a little bit about that quickly?
Yeah,
I think a lot of people struggle with being like really consistent, myself included, if I'm to be honest. If it wasn't for my team holding my feet to the fire in regards to, okay, we're going to post four of these things every week, you've got to batch the next month out kind of thing. Like it would be a nightmare to try and get me to come up with content on the fly like that. Like I've got to batch stuff together. What sort of things do you do to be super consistent on that?
Yeah. So I make a lot of content. So I make every day, probably about 70 pieces of content that go out across all platforms.
Right.
The thing that has helped me, it's again, it's all systems and processes. So I always say when I talk about it, I say I want to try and limit the variables and reduce friction. That's my kind of thing. So limiting variables means things that could go wrong. So anywhere that could go wrong, and then reducing variables would be anything that requires me to have to think like kind of the variables of that problem. So what am I going to talk about today? So for me, I'm a big advocate of themes, sticking to those themes. So what I have is I use a OneNote system. Just use OneNote, open up OneNote, you can use Evernote, you can do whatever you want. But I have every time a question is DM to me, every time anything at all, question, client result, anything, it goes into a tab on OneNote. And a rule with me is I have to do whatever is on the top tab that morning. Okay. So when I wake up, I walk in here at 9 o'clock and I record, I open it up and it's, I might not like it. I'm like, oh, I don't really want to talk about that. But I'm like, nope, that's the question. Talk about that, do that. So I do one piece of content a day of a theme. And then that one theme is repurposed into everything that day. Right. And then so that way, if anyone asks me questions about it, because I'm struggle with the scheduling, whenever I've scheduled, people go, oh, I love that post about this. I'm thinking, I don't have a clue what you're talking about. Like, and actually, I probably don't even feel that way now because that's just how I felt that morning when I was talking, you know? So whereas that now I can respond in the day. So for me, it's really simple. I do 1 hour and then I down tools. And I'm just really strict with that. That's the 1 hour and I call it my content power hour. And when that hour's up, so, you know, like 9 till 10, at 10 o'clock, no matter how far I've got, you've got to stop. Yeah. And what's funny is I can do all that content about 40 minutes now. But at the beginning, you know, if you're going to do one piece of content a week, do that hour still. That's what I would say to people, is do that hour and it might take you 7 days to get that one video out, but you'll eventually compress that. And eventually you'll be able to do one a day, two a day, four a day. It scales. What I noticed was less about what you do and more about that you're telling yourself for that 1 hour I'm focused in.
Yep.
You end up achieving way more. But I'm a big advocate. If I had to think of the ideas in the morning, you'd take up half the hour.
Oh, I hear the idea. Yeah, totally.
So, and someone like yourself, you know, you and all of us, the thing I always say to people is just what they call like burning questions. So it's just you always ask questions every single day and they can be repeated. Mine are the same 10 questions every day. They're no different.
Yeah.
But my take might be different because I drank a different coffee that morning, you know.
Right, it really
does change the way your perspective is.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the time we can overthink our content creation. We think that everybody that follows us consumes every piece of content we ever produce, and that is not the case at all.
Most of them don't care.
I know, the consistency is like the most important thing, right? Okay, so fun one to end on. I always ask this of everybody now. What is one thing that's on Ash's bucket list that he wants and is going to tick off in the next 12 months?
As in business or personal?
Doesn't matter what it is. It's up to you.
I want to move house. I want to move house to a, that's my thing. I want to be able to, we live in a similar area in Cambridge and they're not cheap. And I want to be able to move and get to, you know, a proper family home. That's my, that's on my list. That's
so like, what does the family home look like?
Your four beds, detached, big garden, greenhouse. It's greenhouse, because that's what I said, yours is the thing. My wife grows food, so I want to, you know, be able to like have a greenhouse, garage, and home gym. Like the an actual proper house, you know, like a, like nothing wrong with that. Like I live in a small terrace house in Cambridge, so it's not, I want an actual house where my dog can run, my kids can play. Yeah. And you know, we can do it. We just have to wait till April, I guess. And then I have to bite the bullet of taking a big mortgage, which I don't like, which is all part of growth, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know enough about the industry, so I'm sure you'll be able to figure a way.
Oh, I know a good one
to get it sorted out. Well, listen, man, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your journey, very much so. Good luck with everything in the future. And for anybody tuning in, we'll have the links to everything over on the show notes if you want to go check out Ash and what he's all about. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
And now it's time for Chris's Coaching Corner, where we hear his thoughts and suggestions to help his guest go further, faster.
So if I'm Ash right now, you know, I'm in a pretty nice spot, right? Like I'm working with 20 people. I'm charging them anything between 1500 to 2 grand a month. I'm making good money. My personal brand is growing well. There's a few things that I would do to scale things up and to be able to live an even better lifestyle as that personal brand entrepreneur. First and foremost, I would without a doubt increase those prices a little bit more. And you heard that Ash is planning on doing that up to $2,000-$2,500 per month. So that's a no-brainer. Like when you're working in a very simple business model such as Ash's, where it is ultimately a one-on-one scenario, and I know a lot of people that stick to one-on-one, as long as they're charging right for it, they can make a very, very good living. You don't have to have an overly diverse ecosystem of products and services, although we do talk about that quite a lot on the show. Every now and then it makes total sense to just stay in your lane. And that's exactly what he's doing. But you can't scale a one-on-one business. It's impossible to do so. The only way you make more money is by charging more, plain and simple. So A, I would up my prices without a doubt. Number two is I would absolutely get that book out of my head and into the world sooner rather than later. That's going to open up more opportunities for high level B2B type of consultations, as well as probably some speaking and keynote opportunities as well at industry events. And when you're already known as the top dog in the game, getting yourself onto stages is one of the easiest ways to be able to stay top dog in the game as well. And then lastly, I would go deep on conversations with people in regard to that equity play. So instead of charging people for X amount of money every month for mentoring them and coaching them, I would turn around and say, hey, why don't you give me 15% of your business, 20% of your business, 10% of your business, and we'll work together on this thing. I won't charge you, but I'll take a stake in what it's all about. I'll show that I've got more skin in the game from a partnership perspective. And over the next 5 years, hopefully with a little bit of luck, those dividend payouts or potentially even those exits end up being a great, great investment of time, energy, and effort. So great job, Ash. I think you're doing fantastic. It's a joy to be able to see you fly after our time with each other over the last few years, and I can't wait to see what you've got planned next. For you guys tuning in, appreciate you more than you possibly know. Hope you're enjoying this season, and we'll be back at you again with another episode real soon. Until then, take great care.
Thank you for tuning in to Viewpreneur FM. Why not head over to our official website at viewpreneur.com to access all our tools and resources essential to building, marketing, and monetizing a future-proof business based around your expertise. We'll see you next time.